The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by Paddy and Pete. Wow, do you know what? One day we'll get to a full pack. Little Stevie boy there, but Stevie's working, so he's self-employed. He's got to get the work when he can. Well, he takes the work when he can get it, you know, anyway. And, Paddy, are you self-employed? Are you working at the moment?
Yeah, I'm in employment at the moment, yep.
Good. Listen, someone's got either a really bad back or a squeaky chair. So, whatever it is, I hope it's a chair. Because you need to go see a chiropractor. Yeah, that's awful. You know, Pete?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Okay, boys, what phones have you got? Pad, what phone have you got?
I've got an iPhone.
iPhone, yeah. Pete?
Yeah, iPhone.
Yeah, iPhone. Me, I've got an iPhone. If you saw this week, it's the US accusing tech giant of monopolising the smartphone market. Really? Yeah. Really? Oh, yeah. Yeah, apparently, I didn't realise this, what Apple are doing. First of all, it accused them for that, right? But also, Apple apparently has made it difficult to phones to connect to smartwatches if they're not on. I got my Apple, so it connects okay with mine. But an Apple iWatch, any other sort of smartwatch, there's difficulty, and they do that on purpose, apparently. And they've blocked banks and other financial firms from accessing tap-to-pay technology. So I didn't realize you could actually use other people's tap-to-pay on an iPhone. And also, this is a funny one, right? You know, text messages, if they're sent from another phone to rival phones, it distinguishes them by using green bubbles. Well, I thought they were all green bubbles, aren't they?
No.
Where are they?
If you text an iPhone, bubbles. It's blue.
Yeah. Oh. That's iMessage, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So why is
you still use text messages?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What mic are you on, Pete? Because it sounds dreadful. You're not using your iPhone, are you? Because it's a very good...
My iPhone's a bit knackered. I'm going to get a new one. Okay. I might go for an iPhone.
Yeah, I would for you, because once you're in that ecosystem they've got, you can't get out of it, can you? Isn't it down to the fact that, I mean, there are 16 states. Apparently this one was serious challenges to Apple. 16 states, sprawling complaint filed from a federal court. 16 attorney generals marks one of the biggest challenges to Apple to date, which has been fending off mounting complaints over its practices. And I'm just thinking, if Trump gets in, there won't be a problem because he's a big fan of Tim Apple, isn't he? Do you remember that? Do you remember that when all those tech giants are on a table and Trump, that sort of sums him up. Okay, thanks, Tim Apple. this guy's a billionaire, Tim Apple, you know, and I like how he thinks.
Jeff Amazon.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff Amazon. Thanks, Tim Apple. But that's sort of something Trump up. He's a little bit simple, isn't he, in some ways? But of course, he's a stable genius in other ways. Anyway, let's go on.
A smart money is saying he's going to get back in.
I don't know if it's smart money, but if you look at what you're competing against. You've got a man who can't walk, pretty much, because he's so old, and he's going for another term. He can't. Have you seen how stumbly Joe Biden is? He's literally the walking dead, isn't he? If someone said tomorrow he's died, he's passed away, I wouldn't be surprised. He's on the edge of it. It's like, that's his competitor, his main rival. It's not a lot to go against. I mean, Trump seems like a, you know, spring chicken. Well, you know, well, sort of almost a corn-fed one, isn't he, really, the colour of his skin?
They're the same age, though, aren't they? Or they're not far off?
Yeah, I think Biden's a few years older, maybe. I don't know, certainly around the same age. But there's not a lot of, you know, what options you've got there, is it? Trump the maniac or Biden the dead? What do you go for? You know, anyway. Boys, are you getting... last week, Paddy, I don't know if you listened to the podcast, but Pete has been a bit, you know, more into stocks and shares now. For ages, you switched off, boys. Like a bear market, you switched off.
Completely.
I was still here.
There was nothing to see. It was like watching static on a TV.
That's all right. Some people do that for a long time. Yeah.
Worse than watching static on a TV.
Yeah, it's like watching static on a TV, but getting electrocuted while you're watching it, I suppose. That's what the market does to you. It affects your emotions, the market. It's all about emotions, isn't it? And I can have a bad day while stocks are down, I'm in a bad mood. Good day, stocks are up. It's amazing that, isn't it? It's just numbers and figures. It's crazy. It's like an electronic monster moving. It's got a life of its own, the market, isn't it? Moving around and stuff. Anyway, Paddy, are you now taking a bit more interest? Because we are, I've got to say, right, 2024, I honestly believe this, in the second half especially, it's going to be a standout year. Absolutely ball out of the park here. Really knocking the skin off the ball. I think it's been phenomenal. So, you know, don't go selling right near the bottom or anything, because everything will rise. All boats will rise in the tide. Everything. Even the actual...
Even G-Fin?
Even... No, G-Fin. No, that's... Well, it did, didn't it, this week? It literally went up by 170%. Yes. When they said, basically, hello, we're not dead. We're not dead yet. People said, oh, it's still alive. It's got a breath. It's just... We've discovered a little pulse. It's got a pulse. And they put the jump starts on it. Like, it is like that. Near-dead situation. Near-death, isn't it? When you get a critical sort of, you know... It's like someone's been knocked over by a car, pretty much, and they look, they're done for. And they take him into A&E, and it seemed like they're out of it, dead. And all of a sudden, their finger twitches. Oh, hang on. And they put the jump starts on them. And that's what happens there. When you've got to stop this hammered down so much that you think it's dead... And then there's a little bit of life, and they resuscitate it. Oh, there's a couple of, you know, there's a couple of weeks left in him yet. So that's what happened with G-Fin. But still, it's nowhere near where it used to be. But yeah, no. But most stocks. How many stocks do you hold, then, Pad? Now,
six.
Okay. Do you want to name them?
Trufin. Trufin.
Good. Yes.
I still own Polarian.
Yeah.
Still own a tiny little bit of Space and People. Mm-hmm. Biome's going to come good at some stage. I'm sure of it. As will G-Tech.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I sold what they called XP Factory.
Did you?
A while back, with the intention of having that cash ready to go when something got exciting.
Yeah.
So, right. For the first time ever, I feel like I am in a position to actually invest something. Okay. Now that I've finally logged into my account again. It took me about a week for all the various passwords. So yeah, I'm ready to go.
Good.
And I've been looking at it, so I'm paying attention a bit again now. But yeah.
Well, I did. I did say a while back. Didn't I? A long time back, actually. This is a long time. I said you've got to. Doesn't matter if you're underwater. Last 6 months is a lot of time, but must have been a year ago. I think last time we did a podcast together, I said you've got to sell something, get some cash on board, because some of these companies will be a lot lower, but they'll still be good companies. Some of them, this is where you earn good money. The next 3 to 5 years, the next 3 to 5 years, it won't go straight up, of course, but the next 3 to 5 years, it's a once in a decade opportunity, and it's hard to call the bottom. But now we're seeing, you know, and it's central bank driven, and of course central banks have the levers and the pulley system to get it going again, and the ratchet system to get the market working, and that's what it's coming from. It's, you know, interest rates are going to come down, probably June, July, maybe, who knows, but it's going to be second half this year, and the markets were looking. In fact, yesterday we had a bit of an all-market rally just on the comments from the Fed, then Bank, Andrew Bailey, Bank of England, which I think they were late raising interest rates. I think they're going to be late reducing them, because you don't wait till inflation gets to 2%, because then it's almost like, you know, having a super tanker and saying, you know, when do we stop this super tanker? You don't stop it when it gets, to 5 yards away from the coast. You stop it like a mile out, you know, and slow it down and reverse drive, whatever you do, because that's the economy.
Reverse drive.
Yeah, you know, you put it, just reverse, isn't it, I suppose? I didn't need the
reverse,
word drive.
Yeah.
I didn't need the word drive there.
Do you mean reduce them early, not late?
Well, yeah, I think you should reduce interest rates, start easing them down, because the lag effect is about 12 to 18 months. I mean, I'm not talking about just because what's going to happen is, you know, if you what can happen is you go into deflation a little bit, and if economy, and that's really bad. So what you need to do is just, you know, edge it down a notch, 0.25%, and they should have done that. You know, when they're edging it back up, isn't that? And stay the time. And in fact, it's always the central bank's sort of fault. It's always. They're always extreme, aren't they? They're pumping money in, reducing interest rates to nothing, then all of a sudden ratcheting them back up. I said, but lads, keep it calm. Just keep interest rates at 2%. It's fine. And whatever happens to the economy, you know, inflation sorts itself out. If it rallies like crazy, people will stop buying things. They stop buying things if things get too expensive. If I'm going into the shop and pasta's £10, I won't buy pasta. Or whatever.
Going back to XPF, because I did sell a little chunk of back.
Excuse me, sir. Can you get closer to your mic?
I'm sorry. Talking about XPF, I did actually sell a little bit a few months ago, but I kept most of my holding.
on the belief that things will turn around, you know, the economy will get better, people will feel wealthier, and that, you know, things like leisure stocks will see a decent recovery.
Yes.
And then this week they released results suggesting that even despite the economic situation, people are spending money and they are, them as the company, are doing well, really. And that's really, really positive. And, you know, in true stock style, well, the S&P took a bit of a knock. I mean, it went up a bit and dropped down again and then took a knock. And I thought of, I don't really follow the logic, because the picture is getting better in terms of, so, it, you know, the picture's been, is surprisingly good for them as a business. And then the picture for the punter is getting better with national insurance drops and more higher disposable income, interest rates potentially coming down, et cetera, et cetera. And you sort of think, well, come on, look further than just the immediate. That stock is doing, or that company is doing well, and will do even better. And I don't know.
This is why I sold. This is it. This is exactly why.
Yeah.
Why? Because you think
I don't think the stock market actually understands what they are, what they do.
Right. Okay.
I don't think people who work at the institutions would go into these places. I don't think they have a full picture of what's actually happening there, because they've had lots of positive numbers, and it's never actually done what you would expect to happen. Like it's very frustrating.
But hang on, we're talking about the last 2 years, 2.5 years, man. We've been in a downtrend, and when you get to a recession, you do particularly feel that these kind of companies are this leisure companies. First of all, what Pete said there is absolutely correct. The places to look now are these beaten down stocks, a sector. Yeah. You look at a sector that's been beaten down and you pick a good one within the sector. Now, XP Factory, there's three or four probably listed micro-cap leisure companies. There's Nightcap, what else is there? There's quite a few of them. But no, more than that, actually. There's about half a dozen of them that I'm aware of. And by far the best is XP Factory. It's that you got, you know, most of these, I mean, Nightcap, for example, is, in fact, you probably know the lady who runs it. She used to be on Dragon's Den, Sarah, something, I don't know. But anyway, it's mired in debt. Yeah. And you've got some of the bars, well, Evolution Bars, whatever they call it, Revolution Bars, you know, absolutely, completely under the net debt, massively, millions and millions. And this is literally, I think they do have a net debt, but 23 grand. But they're generating cash, it's fine. And their growth is very good. And I think it's in an area that's, it's not a fad. People are generally wanting to go out and play games while they're having a few drinks these days, the younger people, even older people. So I think honestly, XP Factory would be one of the best recovery plays out there. Because literally, what's the market cap now? Maybe just, let me look at it. 44, so look at the figures, you know. 96% growth to 44 million. This is for, you know, 12 months to the half year. They're changing the year end, so it's essentially 12 months, even though they're called interims. So 96%. So operating profit of 1.7 million from a 4.9 or 5 million loss. You know, so you have to understand, when they start these new bars, there's a lot of, you know, setup costs, training costs, all that stuff. Now, that, you know, that was massive. In the last year, because they were rolling out these bars, that cost burn will reduce massively, because they're only opening a few bars a year, enough to get good growth. But it's, you know, as I said, as a percentage of their estate, it's getting smaller and smaller, so it won't be, you know, burdensome. You know,
and that's during a period of people like the punters, you know, finding things, you know, feeling the squeeze, feeling the pinch, you know.
Exactly. This is the worst time ever economically. You know, we've had inflation go up. You've also got living wage going up in April.
Yeah.
Which is sort of price. People are worried about that as well. But like I said, if you look at the margins on this business, it's, you know, it's not going to be as hit as some of the sort of just restaurant stocks or just bars, because their margins are a lot better than those. So they got good margins, a good growth. They're literally They are a market cap of 25 million doing 45 million. We're going to be 52 million soon in a year. So, I think it's a good recovery play. I don't hold it. In fact, if anything, I fell in love with the story too much, and I should have got out earlier, and I'm still now looking. When it starts to tick up, I think this will be excellent recovery play. And it's on my watch list. And I think it will rally very strongly.
Are there similar stocks in the market which are successful and are doing well?
Yeah. Well, I've done, you know, if in fact, I don't want to give a plug here, but I've started with the first, I don't know if you've seen this week, I've rolled out on my website, it's not available to new members yet, I will be rolling it out, but stock scores, you know? What this aims to do, it's got essentially, it's micro caps. I've got a list of 100 companies, right? all pretty much sub, some of them maybe a little bit over, or some of them maybe just good, I think, good recovery players. Most of them, 98% of them, are sub 100 million market cap. That's because the best performers, and I'm not talking about pop and drop stocks, you know, the best performers, I'm talking long term, 3 to 5 years, best performers come from sub 100 million market caps. They generally got revenue growth, and that translates into profitable growth as they mature. And they continue growing throughout the year. So I rate every one of these companies via their metrics on growth, value, health, efficiency, momentum, potential, and I score them. And so these are well-run companies. There's loads on there, really, if you look at them. And if a company's top scorer, I'm looking, I own the number one top scorer here, and I'm up, I think it's about 30% on that. But it's got longevity. It's sustainable. Because it's not like the resource companies you see are in trouble. If you're a resource company and we're not in a bullish environment, and in fact, people think if you want to make a fast buck, yeah, you've got to trade a resource company. But you don't know when the pop is going to happen. You don't know when the drop is going to happen. So you could see, you know, good sort of 50, 60, 100%, 200% in the bull market rise, and it'll come down because they need money. They haven't got any money. You know, they're digging dirt in Africa looking for shiny stones and stuff. But the money they're using basically is going into the ground. And mostly, I'd say, I don't know what percentage terms, but the majority of these stocks, all they actually generate ever is more shares to raise finance. So you can earn a quick buck on those. But I'm talking about if you want to invest in businesses, and by businesses, I mean the actual, you know, sell something, they generate revenue and that becomes profitable. Then you've got to look at these, you know, these things. I did, in fact, last week with Peter, I went through 10 baggers, all started sub 100 million, and they were 10 baggers, all on AIM, sub 100 million, and they all had growth in common. There's nothing in common with sectors and which sectors they're in, but they all had consistent growth, and they did 10 bags. And that was over, like, I'm not talking about over 1 year, probably, I'm talking about over, you know, 3 to 5, 10 years. So,
yeah.
And you find one of those, and just sit back and relax, and then you can take a little bit out if you want. But you can, you know, I think the best way to play those is put a stop loss in literally once you get to break even, and you can't lose money there. You may want to edge it up. If like 1,000% up, of course, you can move that up, of course, massively if you want. But never trip yourself out on something like, you know, there could have been a JD Sports which done, or even like ASOS which done 10,000%. You know, but that's what I'm looking to find. This is what Stock Scores is about.
Recovery plays. You know, the reason I didn't sell all of my XPF was like my gut feeling was it would recover, so I sold a little chunk but kept the majority. And because to my mind, you can't time the market. You don't know when the recovery will start, and then at what point do you get into that recovery? I mean, if you look at the charts, it's when what the 20-day moving average moves above the 50-day moving average. Is it? I mean, at what point are you looking to get back into, say, an XPF or whatever?
Yeah, well, essentially,
I'm just sat in there. I'm waiting.
Yeah. So essentially, what I am, you know, this Stock Scores, right, on my website, it monitors about 20 metrics. I mean, growth and value. Growth is the most important for small stocks. Absolutely, growth. You need growth. Because that's what they're doing. They're small companies and they want to grow. So they haven't got, by growth, I mean, financially, in a reported as top line growth, and then hopefully that translates in. But also, you know, I also measure like everything from, you know, operating profit growth, net profit growth, operating cash flow growth, and free cash flow growth. But top line is where all that stems from. So as long as they've got that, then one of the metrics is momentum. That's very important. So growth, value, momentum, probably the three most important metrics. So if a company's not super overvalued, it's fine. They tend to travel further because if a company's super overvalued already, then if they miss an estimate, it'll fall off a cliff. So if you get growth and value, and then you need momentum, and then it's basically, you know, stocks and shares, it's a market. It's all about supply and demand. It's all about shares, you know. And if you have net supply, that means more people are selling than buying, the share price will go down. If you've got net demand, more people buying and selling, the share price will go up. Now, how do you measure that? Then essentially on the chart is the pictorial representation. This is a chart. You know, that shows you what volume is going through it. If it's net demand, you are getting the share price going up high because it's only a certain amount of supply in the market. And if that supply dries up and the demand picks up, the share price will rise. At the moment, of course, more people are selling the XP factory than buying. After a while, that will change. It will change. And then what you get then is a series of higher lows and higher highs. That means people, when it sells, literally people are buying it. So I mean, even that low is higher than the last low, and also it's making new highs. That's showing net demand. So the only way, it's hard to look at that chart on an individual basis, but an easy way of using that is a moving average. You know, so you use a moving average, a 50-day moving average, and if the share price goes above the 50-day moving average, you say, right now, people are paying more than the 50-day average for that price, for that stock. If you get about 200 days, and that's normally a good bull bear line, you say, okay, now this is a trend where people have been paying, literally, the last 200 days, people have been paying, you know, above that 200-day moving average price, which is a good sign because everyone's sort of buying.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what it means. If you stick the momentum on that, and it's all about, you know, money flow. It's a constant demand on the stock. It'll rise.
Yeah.
And then what you get then is self-fulfilling prophecy, where people tend to buy, you know, rising stocks. They tend to sell falling stocks. So then you get people come in, that's a riser, I want to make money, I want to buy it. But of course, there's not that much supply about. So, it's, you know, market makers will push up the price and they'll carry on. So it's self-fulfilling. Momentum is a very powerful force. But if you've got that, you know, in conjunction with value and growth, then you're on to a winner. And that's why I've created this stock list, to measure all metrics that matter. And I attribute points to the metrics that really matter. But I mean, I also, you know, monitor like health and efficiency, because that's very important, and potential, where sort of broker targets are or where my targets are, just by metrics. But I mean, the most important ones are growth and value. But I think this is, in this list, right, there is a 10 bagger. Because they follow the metrics that...
One in 100.
Well, no, there's probably several 10... Yeah, there's probably 10... It's probably... Yeah. No, but some of them may not be 10 baggers, but some of them are baggers, or one or two baggers or three baggers. But within that list, there's a super stock that will super outperform most of the market.
Do you know which one it is? Or are you just saying one of 100?
Well, you just have to keep monitoring. All you have to see...
Just tell us which one it is.
Well, hang on. If they keep growing and performing, they will be a 10-bagger. You know, that's what you have to do. And if it's at the top of that list, for example, if it's at the top of that list, it's not only got good growth, right? It's not only good value. It's not only healthy. It's efficient. It's got momentum and potential. So if it's got all those, so you can say, companies, it's not measured on share price. Well, it is. If it takes off, then the value, what happens then, the scores on value and potential go down. Because, of course, it becomes less, it becomes overvalued. And, of course, if it's closer to its target price or it overshoots the target price, then they'll be in the red, the scores will drop, and it'll get ranked down to the bottom of the list. So, you know...
I'm going to print it out, stick it on the wall and throw a dart at the list.
Yeah, yeah.
And wherever that lands, that's your 10-bagger, baby.
Well, every night, the share prices, market caps, shares in issue, moving average, all updated. So it's updated every day. So like I said, there was a company, I think, I used to do this on my spreadsheets, of course, and it works on that. But, I mean, I kind of think it was a company that rallied strongly. And it was at number 2, but now it's at number 7, I think. Because, of course, the valuation's gone up, and then there's less potential, and it's not as cheap as it was, and so it gets marked down in the points. So it's dynamic, and it works that way. So if you're going to start researching...
How regularly are you going to update the actual fundamentals?
It's basically a company releases news twice a year, interims. And so I've got 100 companies there. I've obviously inputted a lot more companies than that, but I cut them off at 100 because I think after that there's no point, you know. In fact, you should start researching the top 10, really, or number 1. Start with that one and work down, because you know full well the one at number 1 has got very good metrics on every level. If I see any broker targets come out or notes come out, I check that they haven't upgraded it or downgraded it, because that's where the forecasts are, you know. So you
look wonderful trading updates that companies sometimes release.
So when you get a trading update, basically, if it's an upgrade, then the broker's up to the target. So I look through it and I'll adjust my forecast on that, and I also adjust the broker target on it. So, you know, it depends. But generally... I'm thinking, can I manage? So I input all day. If you look at that, 100 companies there, because all the financial... I went through a period where I had to get them... I thought, I've got to get them on the site, all of them. And it's taken me ages to input all this data. But I realise now it's not too bad to manage, because I think you probably get, you know, maybe one or two companies come up with interims or full results a year out of that list. So I just update them. So and I'll never go beyond 100. So it will be too much of a burden, hopefully. But check it out.
Okay.
But people are non-members. I will be opening it up very soon. Just go to sharepickers.com/subscribe. And if you want to start with quality companies, it's a good thing to start off with. Just look at this is not a slam dunk buy. What I'm saying is, if a company's at the top of this list, they've got everything aligned. You know, everything's sort of aligned. They've got everything, growth, good value. The health is good. They're efficient. They've got momentum and they've got decent potential as well. That means broker targets, forecasts are looking very good. So, yeah.
How about put 100 quid on each of them? So that's 10 grand.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thing is, right, I will be monitoring this to see how the top 10 perform. Because unless the company comes out with some bad news, then as long as they keep performing, they'll do well, because it's only based on financial metrics. You know, the only thing that's questionable sometimes are the forecasts, but because that's based on future, you can't really see the future. But if you've got a track record of a company, you can see what they're hopefully going to do, what their margins are, and all that stuff. But but that can change. But nevertheless, I don't ascribe huge amount of points to forecasts. You know, I do ascribe some points, but not a huge amount. So it's not.
Are you going to track the share prices for all of them?
Yeah. Well, no. I'll see. I mean, I've got to find a way of doing that. I need someone. I need to find out how I can track the share price of all these because they move. But. Yes.
It's very detailed, isn't it? It's very detailed.
Very, very detailed.
Well, I'm obsessed with it. It's all I do. So I was thinking, what moves share prices? What does move share prices? And essentially, it's growth, value, and momentum. And then you get that. But there's a couple of other things. Not as easy as that. But once you get, even if you find this company with good growth, good value, and it's got momentum, you want to win it pretty much. It's
What are your forecasts based on?
So, they're based on broker notes, essentially. But sometimes I'll give... So a broker could just come up with a target. And for example, so if you look at a company, click onto it, the target price there is what the broker gives it, right? And then I will... If you scroll down in the company, you can see the forecast at the bottom over the next 3 years. So you can't really forecast further than that. And then I will ascribe, for example, a multiple to like the revenue, the EBITDA, and the net profit, and... based on where it's roughly been, in the last few years. And I'll see then if there's upside on that. I'm quite conservative. So I think if there's upside on my target, and if my target and the broker target aligns sort of, then there's maybe, it's a good stock, I think. But if I've seen companies with the broker target, it's like it's 500% up. And I'm thinking, what? I can't see how it's even 20% up. So they're obviously looking into the future a long way. And I'm not. I'm looking at 3 years down the line. So... But there we are.
Yeah.
But if you get a company like that, the broker target's massive, and my forecast is nowhere near that. Then, not that I'm right and they're wrong, I'm just saying there's something not right about that, So maybe go with one that's largely aligned in some way. But I love it. I love it. I want to find a system. I'm always like finding systems all the time, right? And I think this is it, pretty much, It's not. I'm not saying they're all winners, but these metrics, you can't really criticise because they are... based on fact, figures. And that's what I said, don't worry about it. When you look at it as a company growing, it's down to basically, figures, numbers, fact. Numbers are fact. Everything else is opinion. Don't worry about the CEO is saying, oh, we're doing really well. Yeah, we're going to be 10 bagger. Yeah. Don't worry about that. Because that's nonsense, isn't it? The figures tell the truth. There's very, 99.9% of the time, the figures are accurate. Every now and again, you get a dodgy CFO that's tucking money or just manipulate the figures. Doesn't happen very often, though. But generally, the figures are what you should be paying attention to rather than a thing. But but it's getting better as well. At the moment, I only feature full year results. But next week, there'll be interim results. So you can compare how they're tracking for the first 6 months compared to the last set year, full year. So they're growing like 30% last year. Okay, how are they doing the first 6 months of this year then? And you can see whether the growth is still there, the value is still there, whatever. It's a good benchmark. So all that stuff. I've got loads of stocks, Paddy. I do write... do you know what I'm doing at the moment? I think the market is turning. So what I'm doing is, and this is my advice to you, Patrick, right? And I give this analogy. In fact, I made a better analogy of this than last week. I've written it in the book. But always start very small. Start very small, almost stupid small, that you can't make it. Because if you make a mistake, it won't hurt your portfolio, right? But you know when you've got a winner. And all you need to do is and I said, you mentioned the Grand National pad, right? There's 30 horses there, pretty much, right? And so, okay, I want to back a winner. How do I back a winner, right? So first of all, on average... I didn't realise this, I looked it up today. Over the last 20 years, the average odds of a horse that wins is 24 to 1, right? So if you put a pound on literally 24 out of 30 horses, you have a good chance of getting your money back because one of those 24 comes in and you get 24 to 1 on average, right? But you don't need to do that. And I say this, Pete. I said, if you were like investing in stocks, right? And I say, so if you say back 10 stocks, for example, or 10 horses, right? And then you're allowed to bet up to 75% of when the race is completed. After that, bet's shut, right? So you got to be back in 10 horses, for example, and you see that 5 year horses in the lead pack, 5 are not in the lead pack, they're way off. But you're allowed to move your stakes from the losing horses to the winning horses, right? Now, you imagine doing that. You think, okay, I've got a higher probability of backing a winner if I can move my money to the front of the races. And that's the same investing, right? Would you ever move that the money you've got in the 5 leading horses to the losers? You'd never do that, would you, right? But that's what people do all the time in stocks and shares. They literally average down or double down on the losers they've got, and then cut short the winners. And they don't ever do that. That's the two biggest mistakes investors ever make. You know, you should never actually, you know, you should keep losers small, really go big with the winners. So you double up, you know, average up on the winners, and you know when they start winning because you can see it. And then you cut back or keep small on the losers, and you get that dynamic in your portfolio. So for example, you can pick 10 stocks, put a tiny bit into all, and when you see one start winning, take it away from the loser and start edging it towards the winner, you know, and then that's, and that way you leverage towards winners and away from losers. But yeah, does that make any sense at all?
It does, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I guess the horse race is quite easy to see where they're going and what's coming up in the future, whereas with with stocks it's not quite so easy. So it's harder to say yes for sure this one's going to be fine or this one's going to be bad. But
I'll finish off here because I know I'm dragging on a bit. But when you get a company that starts performing the share price and it keeps, you know, releasing news as good and it's a booster, its top line, bottom line, they say this company's got something special. And then you've got one company that's not going anywhere and they're just treading water. They know it's not growing. They're, okay, listen, that one's not working out. I've got that wrong. I'm just going to move my money over to the winner. And then so you take it away from the loser, put it on to the winner. Winners keep winning. You know, share prices. People buy rising share prices. So it's all about that. So, and literally, so as long as you start small, right, and give yourself a couple of chances, you should do well. As long as you're, you know, buying stupidly pop and drop stocks, got no cash or something, then that's, you know, avoid those. I mean,
I'm famous for starting small.
Yeah, exactly. But end very big. Yeah, that was on his that was on his dating app profile. I start small, end very big. In fact, it ends so big I have to walk out of the house backwards.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Yeah. What was the 10 bagger? You said there was a 10 bagger on this list. Which one is it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Well, there's a couple, I think, in there, 10 baggers. I own a few of them. But these 10 baggers are years. And that's what I like, isn't it?
What are
their
names?
It's not about.
What's the ticker?
Well, I think the number one on the list is a possible 10 bagger. But what I own is, well, a bit further down. In fact, the value in the one I own, where's it by? A bit further down. It's questionable, but it's really shot up massively because it's got a lot of potential.
And the ticker is?
Yeah. What's even, yeah, it's a drop down and the ticker is, I'll give you a clue. Tweet, tweet. There's a clue there, that's a Twitter now. Right. Anything else, Paddy? Anything, Paddy? Have you seen anything?
You think you aren't going to tell us? Okay, right.
I can tell you. I will tell you. But in fact, really oddly, I've talked about this before. But an RNS has come out from Beaks. It's called Beaks Financial Cloud. Right.
Beaks.
And it's called BKS as ticker. Now, what they do is supply cloud-based trading systems to stock market groups, and they've already signed up the New York Stock Exchange, I think the South African Stock Exchange, quite a few of them, but literally it's low latency and it's the best bit of kit out there. And so what stock exchanges do, they put these racks within the stock exchange, because they're in the stock exchange, they're very low latency and it's the best technology, and they white label it to brokers, institutions, all these fast traders, you know, all these fast money people. And the fact they signed up the New York Stock Exchange group is the biggest market in the world. And just, if you look at the last set of results, for example, where they did say exchange cloud extension, no, proximity cloud win, significant contract wins. I mean, it's just literally, in fact, read that one on the 6th of February, 2024. It's nothing but good news. And literally, and you can see when you've got technology like that, when you've got the biggest player in the market, the New York Stock Exchange Group, signing up to you, you know your tech is good. you know, it's really good. So the value at the moment is very questionable because, but yet, what I quite like about it is that as the CEO, as the founder, owns over 30% of the company, but he just sold some shares. But they said it's for institutional demand, but you can't, he still owns 32%. So people are saying, oh, he's selling shares. He owns 32%. It's his business. He's a, and when you work hard for years and years and years, you're allowed to take a bit of cash off the table, you know, even though it's only 1% of cash. So he still owns 32%. And what is it?
It rose massively in start of February, didn't it?
Yeah, that's so, where I jumped in. I jumped in there on that significant contracts update. I jumped in there and I thought, wow. And I just tried to buy as much as I can of the bells very hard, but I bought some there, but I'm up on it. Like, so it's fine. Yeah, but I think that could be a very good company. But I realized for a while, I was obsessed with these pre-revenue pop and drop stocks. You could have one of those in your portfolio, one or two of those, but the real winners, they aren't those. They aren't pre-revenue companies. You do get the odd one, 1,000%, and then come back down, you know, next week. But if you want sustainable, long-term multi-baggers, you look for revenue-generating, profitable stocks that are growing. That's where the true winners are. And where you don't have to, you know, keep an eye on it every day just in case you do a placing, because these companies who are profitable don't need to do placings. They generate cash. Okay. So that's where the big winners are. And that's why this list only has revenue generating profitable companies. In fact, some of them are not profitable, but they're close to, but they all generate revenue, you know. But,
anyway. Good.
All right, boys. All right. So any plans this weekend?
Building wardrobes.
Are you building what? Are you any good at building wardrobes, Pad?
We'll find out, won't we?
And on that cliffhanger,
we'd
have to leave. I think we're going to chop that one. Will Paddy's wardrobe turn on okay? We'll see. Yeah. Tune in next week for Paddy's wardrobe.
More a coat hanger than a cliffhanger.
Hey, that's pretty better than Paddy's cliffhanger. Hey, just when I thought couldn't top it, we topped it. Cheers, lads. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Right.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The contents of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.